I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
And welcome to this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum. I'm your host, Rebecca Cressman, and joining me in studio today is Dr. Will Shakespeare. He is Intermountain Healthcare's Medical Director of Surgical Operations and the Director of Anesthesiology. That's a big title, and it's an important thing, and we're going to be talking about something I think is going to revolutionize the way you think about surgery today. So, Dr. Shakespeare, thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Rebecca. Appreciate you having us.
What a pleasure. Also joining us in studio is Bill Evans. Bill, we are describing you as an opioid-free surgery patient, and that gets us into this topic. So you've had surgery without opioids, right?
Yes, about a week and 2 days ago.
That was just the other day.
Yeah.
And it was for appendix?
Lymph node biopsy and appendix, and have appendix removal.
Okay.
They removed some lymph nodes out of my groin area, and they removed my appendix.
Right. And I'm familiar a little bit with the, I can't even say the word, lymphectomy. Do I get that right, Dr. Shakespeare?
Great. You're great.
All right. So let's talk about it. Why did we have Bill Evans go under surgery without opioid use?
I actually turned to Bill to respond to that question.
Bill, why is that?
Well, past experience with surgeries, I used opioids. I got, in the early 2000s, I've had a couple knee surgeries, and I had a couple other surgeries that, I had a lot of pain pills, got addicted to pain pills. I've wound up losing my wife to addiction. My wife had passed away in overdose in 2009.
I'm so sorry, Bill.
And then my daughter, over 2 years ago, had overdosed and from prescription narcotics. I've had a lot of friends I've lost, and so this time around, I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to be clean because I've been to prison, due to my addiction. I did 7 months in prison. I've been out almost a year, and so I just didn't want to be that person no more. I wanted to try to do something different with myself to better myself, because I didn't really need it. See, before the surgery, I told Dr. Shakespeare and the surgeon, please, let's do this opioid-free. And I told him my story a little bit, and he was pretty fascinated with it. And so here I am, and it wasn't that bad. It was actually pretty simple. I've been up and at 'em, and getting up and moving around. And it was wonderful. I'm really grateful that this was here and this opportunity was here to go opioid-free surgery, because I had a knee surgery 6 months ago, and I got hooked on opioids and everything again for about a month and a half, and really thinking about it, I didn't really need them. I was looking for that next high I could get off the opioids from the first time I ever had them, and I'm thinking, I haven't had them for a long time. I can keep doing this, and it wound up to other things. And, I thank God that I got an opportunity to sit home, detox off them, and be able to come here and tell my story a little bit about opioid-free. Because it's either institutions or death for me. And I want to live. I want to be able to help other people with this addiction, be able to tell my story a little bit and let people know that gentlemen like Dr. Shakespeare here has other alternatives other than opioids. And if you really – people are so scared to ask him, but I just flat out told him I just don't want it.
They're scared to ask them because they're afraid to reveal, like, in the past I've had an opioid use disorder. I don't want this doctor to think less of me. Is that what you're saying? The fear keeps them from having those conversations?
Yes, and people are scared to do that. People don't want to tell a surgeon or a doctor or anybody that they've had past drug addiction because they're scared they're going to like, well, you know, we're just going to throw you out in the woods, you know, and this and that. You don't get nothing. You know, you got to suffer, which that's not the case because I know they know the difference between giving somebody an opioid or not giving him an opioid. But I chose not to, and it was my recommendation is do it. Try it. Don't be scared. Talk to your surgeon, your physician about it because there's other alternatives than using opioids for aftercare of surgery. There's other medications they can give, and Dr. Shakespeare will probably get with that. You know, I heard a little bit for telling about it, and I know a little bit from my own experience, and I'm very grateful.
Is this the first patient? And Bill, thank you for having the courage to share that.
You're welcome.
And I'm sorry to know so personally how much your life has been hurt from addictions. And so I'm so sorry about that because I think as a community, we were unaware of the real power of opioids and their ability to set people on the path for opioid use disorders and addictions. So Dr. Shakespeare, was this the first patient that you were aware of that would have a surgery that's opioid-free?
No, not by a long shot. And that's why it was very providential that that Bill and I met last week because this is a project that has been a passion of mine for years. As Bill has told his story, there are a few of us that don't have a family that has been touched in some place by opiate addiction. That this is a pandemic in the United States that we are seeing far too many. We're losing too many people to opioid overdose. We're nationally losing the equivalent of half the city of Sandy every year to opiate use. And here in Utah, we are the seventh leading state for the opioid epidemic, losing about two people a week to this. So this is something that I've felfelt passionately about, and Intermountain Healthcare for the last 6 months has been ramping up this program. And so the fact that Bill, who is really the quarterback of this experience, comes to me last week, and when I meet him in the pre-op area, says, "I want to do this surgery opiate free." I start rubbing my hands and say, "You've come to the right place because this is we see yeah. eye to eye on this, Bill." I want to credit too, if you want to comment, Bill, on the conversation that you had with your surgeon, Dr. Rick Rasmussen, about your interest in doing this opiate free.
So he come into the surgery. I only met with him one time to go over my CT scan in his office. We didn't talk nothing about opioids then. But as I come into the surgery room, I'm in pre-op. He comes in and he says, "Well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to write you out a few prescriptions." And right as soon as he hit the end of prescriptions, I says, "No, I don't want no opioids. I don't want the pain pills." And I kind of told him a little bit about my story. I says, "I'm a recovering addict. I've been addicted to heroin and pills and all the opioids and everything and methamphetamines to use as painkillers and from emotion, like from loss and everything of coping, you know, to deal with pain, coping pain, emotional, physical, and mental." And so he's like, "Okay." And he puts his pen down and he says, that's really amazing you're telling me this, you know, and that's really cool." So the anesthesiologist, he's telling me the anesthesiologist, William Shakespeare will come in, and Dr. Shakespeare will come in, and, you know, you can talk to him more about pain-free, opioid-free surgery. And so, you know, just not long after Dr. Shakespeare comes in, and I told him, you know, I want to do the opioid-free surgery, and I kind of was telling him my story a little bit, and the nurses were all standing there, and it was, like, pretty amazing that I was scared to even say anything at first. And, you know, my dad's sitting there just looking at me with a smile on his face, you know, and having my dad there with me, you know, and wanting to step up to the plate and just try something different, you know, and do something and make these different decisions in my life instead of going to the opioids, because all it's going to do is resort me to either dying or back to prison.
I credit Bill with his courage and his forethought to want to take an experience which would be the perfect excuse to go back to having access to opiates and make a premeditated decision that I don't want this to be part of this experience to trip up my forward progress. That's to his credit. And as we talk about opiate-free surgery, one of the things that I want to point out is that one of the best places to use this is in patients who are trying to avoid recurrent addiction, but that's one of many places that we see benefits of this. We know that opiates are wonderful medications for their appropriate use in cancer pain and in severe acute pain. We have nothing better than opiates. We also know they cause all kinds of horrible side effects, and those side effects cause all of the addiction problems that Bill has described after his knee surgeries. He's sent home with piles of these pills that then become habituating. And actually, we know that from big studies that if you have a major surgery or a minor surgery, your biggest risk after that surgery is not a wound infection and it's not to have a surgical complication. Your biggest risk after a surgery is persistent opiate use. 8 to 20% of patients depending on the type of surgery, will go on at 3 months to still be filling pain pills.
8 to 20%.
Correct. And that's
That's stunning statistics.
Long after the physical healing should have been recovered, there's still habituated use of those.
So what does that tell you as an anesthesiologist?
What that tells me is a few things that are interesting. One is that that opiates at that point are serving a need that is not the acute pain. And the other thing is that we, as a medical community, are overplaying that card far too often. We know some interesting things from studies on the use of opiates for chronic non-cancer pain that patients who come into a pain clinic, there's one study of 135 patients who are on opiates and want to see that it affects their lives and want to discontinue those. They come in and have a two-week medical taper off of those pain medications. And at the end of that 2 weeks, they have less pain, better life function, and better coping skills. And so we have to step back there as a medical community and say, so before you had, when you were taking opiates for this chronic pain, you know, 3 months after a surgery, you had discomfort and you were taking the medications and you still had discomfort. And then we take you off those medications and you have discomfort but are more functional. And something that you mentioned about this new understanding of pain and a willingness to say you're not going to have no discomfort at all. And
yes, before we started the interview, we talked about how we at one point thought when we're going through some kind of a medical experience, whether it be surgery or whatever, that we shouldn't feel any pain. And so we would get enough medication in our body to numb it completely. And in Bill's case, you shared that sometimes it also numbed emotionally for you too. So I had a couple of roles in there. And that there is now a tide that has been turning because of physicians like you, Dr. Shakespeare, they're saying, wait a minute, we're learning that trying to get rid of all pain is actually problematic. And that having a certain level of pain can be helpful for the healing process.
And one of the fascinating things that I would add to that, Rebecca, is that we are learning more about something that is called opioid-induced hyperalgesia. And what that is a high-flown way of saying is that opiates actually increase your capacity to hurt over the long term. And so what we there's a study in which they have two sets of patients who are having a hysterectomy. And one group of patients they give a high dose of fentanyl to during surgery. This is very routine. The majority of surgeries have fentanyl administration. One group gets a high dose of fentanyl and the other group does not. And then they look at after the surgery, so same surgery, same surgeons, they look afterwards and say, use pain medicine as needed for your comfort. And the patients who had more fentanyl actually needed more pain medicine going forward. So in some ways, more is less. And that's one point that I want to ask Bill to comment on here is when we talk about opiate-free surgery or opiate-sparing surgery, one of the misconceptions and fears that people have is that what we're saying is soldier up. This is we're going to give you the leather strap and have
like
you
200 years ago, right?
And, yeah. And what in fact we're talking about is that we recognize that we have again overemphasized opiates as an easy option to treat pain, when in fact we have multiple other things. There's growing evidence of medicines like esmolol, ketamine, dexmedetomidine, lidocaine, magnesium, several of these medications that have been on the formulary for years. Their analgesic, their pain-controlling properties are increasingly being recognized, and it is not a one-stop shop. It involves using these in a very calculated and dose-careful way to assist in pain management.
But none of those are opiates, right?
None of those are opiates, and none of them have the same addictive, euphoric, and breathing effects that that opiates do have. And so what we're finding is that when you give these medications, as we did to Bill, that you have discomfort afterwards, but significantly less discomfort. Just like if we gave you opiates, you would have significantly less discomfort, but not no discomfort. And so Bill can comment on what his experience was with this.
You know, I think the experience was not that bad because when I woke up from the anesthesia, I wasn't really so disoriented. I didn't know where I was at. You know, it's like my head wasn't spinning. I woke up.
You could
up
breathe? You could breathe?
Yeah, I could breathe all, you know, less oxygen. Because before with the opioids, like with the fentanyl and stuff that they do give us during the surgery, you know, they always had to keep putting oxygen on my nose. And it took me longer to get out of the hospital with the opioids. So I'd usually about 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, I'd be sitting there waiting to leave. You know, oh, I'm fine, but I'm really not because my body is not functioning the way it should be because of the opioid use during the surgery. So this time I was out of the hospital within an hour after I woke up from anesthesia. And I was home. I was able to go move around more, you know. And, yeah, there's a little bit of pain, but I think your body will naturally produce an endorphin that will help kill that pain naturally. And I feel like when I took opioids and I had the opioid surgery, my body, I was in more pain when I woke up and when I went home than I was this time. I was in less pain. I was able to get up and go use the bathroom all on my own. I was able to walk up my stairs. I was able to drive home with my dad and be able to have a full conversation with him, you know, go home and tell my mom and my family exactly what had gone on during the surgery. I went downstairs the next day. I was out to lunch with my boss, you know, he took me out that afternoon and went out to lunch. So I would highly recommend people to just really get that conscious thought of doing opioid-free surgery because your function is going to be so much better and you're going to feel so much better inside and out, thinking, oh my gosh, it's only temporary.
And during the surgery, you were still asleep.
Yes.
And unaware. You didn't feel any of that procedure. You woke up, but you were more alert, able to breathe. And the only reason why I brought up that breathing is having had many family members have different types of intensive surgery.
Yes.
Literally, I'm sitting by their side and they say, I can't breathe. And I'm telling them, we're okay. We're watching your oxygen levels. And they literally, one of the effects, as Dr. Shakespeare had shared, the dangerous life-taking risks of opiates is that they do stop our respiration. And you know, so too many opiates literally can cause that death. And so to remove that, I think it's just extraordinary. You were watching this for a few months, though. There was a project before Bill And for those who've just joined us, this is Dr. Will Shakespeare. He's the Intermountain Medical Director of Surgical Operations, the Director of Anesthesiology. The patient who has been so wonderful to join us today is Bill Evans, and Dr. Shakespeare is his anesthesiologist. So.
And I'll just corroborate that our evidence in the 250-plus patients and more every day that we're doing with these opiate-free surgeries at Intermountain Healthcare, that data substantiates what Bill is reporting with his case with Dr. Rasmussen last week, is that without the opiates, these patients are waking up faster, like Bill does, and are more lucid sooner. And the nausea after anesthesia has virtually disappeared in these cases. And I hate nausea. People hate nausea. Nausea is in some ways even worse than pain. And to have that be off the table, because that's a known side effect of the opiates, is a huge benefit. And so that's one point to emphasize, is that opiate-free surgery is not a drudge. We're not asking people to settle for less. We're saying that this is a cleaner, sharper experience to get through. Also want to emphasize that this is not compatible with all surgeries. Bill was able to have a surgery that was amenable to this, and he brought a mindset that was amenable to this. One point to emphasize is that Bill had pain medicine available at any point in his recovery. And this was a dialogue that he and I had beforehand. When he expressed his interest, I told him, I will make non-opiate medications available to you afterwards. I had an injection of an anti-inflammatory drug available for him afterwards, and then some oral medications, some Tylenol available for him. But I said that you always have opiates ordered and ready for you to ask the nurse for at any point. And that's an important point to emphasize, that this is acute pain. And if there is, on top of what we can do with these non-opiates, still pain, we make that absolutely available.
And to me, that goes back to the communication between the patient and the physicians. And I say multiple, right? Because you had your surgeon, right? You had your anesthesiologist having those conversations about the expectation of your care and post-op recovery. What do I do when the pain is at? Sure, go ahead.
Well, yeah, the nurses are all there too, though. That's the amazing thing. What is when they? It's just not like the physician and the surgeon and the anesthesiologist. It's more of a team effort with all the nurses, because they all know, you know, they all communicate with each other. It's just not two people doing, three people doing it, myself, Dr. Shakespeare, and the surgeon. It's the nurses too, because they come in and they check on you, they check everything and make sure, but they know that you don't want it, but they offer it. You know, they say, are you sure you're okay? You know, and it's there, but it's a team effort between the whole surgical staff. Just not three people. It's everybody.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. We have about 4 minutes left in our interview, and I know people are going to have some questions as to how do I know whether or not if I'm having an upcoming procedure, whether I should choose opioid-free surgery, and how do I have those conversations?
So that's a great question, and that is the question. The reason that we're having this dialogue today is that we want more people to come in, as Bill did, saying, how can I get through this with as little opiate as possible? Because of multiple reasons, because I've had miserable experiences with anesthesia or surgery or opiates in the past where they make me sick, they hurt my digestion, or they give me a rash, and we say there are options that we can do this without, or to avoid the risk of having opiates as part of your surgical experience, even if you don't have a background of substance addiction history, just to prevent that. We had a patient, a young 17-year-old, who he and his father came in for a knee surgery and had talked about this risk in advance, and he asked to have opiate-free surgery and did great with the pretty involved surgery. So all of those, I think that it's always the right question to ask. If you come in asking your surgeon and your anesthesia provider if opiate-free surgery is an option, then we're having the right conversation. There will be cases in which we tell you this is a big involved surgery, and we will use all of the non-opioid medications that we can, and then we will have these medicines available to treat your discomfort. And that is not a failure. That is that means that we have maximized the fruits and vegetables. And then if you need some sweets on top of that, then so be it as well. And really, for big spine surgeries or for thoracic surgeries, those are going to need surgeries, but those are going to need opiates. But even in those, we call those opiate sparing surgeries and not necessarily opiate free surgeries. If you're having a carpal tunnel release or a gallbladder or a robotic surgery, many of these are very amenable.
It's to me, extraordinary information, because we as a community are learning more and more about how powerful opiates are. And I hope, Bill, that when you were hearing Dr. Shakespeare say 8 to 20% of individuals who are prescribed opiates at surgery have issues with addiction 3 months later, that helps you understand that your body was reacting also in a way that it wasn't all choice, right?
I'm really grateful to have somebody that is working towards this, because, you know, I'm just grateful to Dr. Shakespeare because of what he's doing is an amazing project. And, you know, I just want to let people know, don't be scared. Don't have those fears, because a lot of these guys know, you know, they know how to make you feel better. They know how to, don't be scared to say, hey, I'm an addict. Don't be scared. Because if when you get that scared, you can wind up right back in the same situation where before. You know, talk to these doctors. Let them know what's going on with you. Don't, you know, and communicate with them, because, yes, they are going to make you comfortable. They're not going to shut you down on everything. But, yeah, they'll help you more through the process of not going back to that opioid use.
You know? And it's a powerful thing to advocate for yourself.
Yes.
To advocate for your own health long term.
And it'll save your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill Evans, thank you for your courage,
welcome,
for sharing today. And I'm
thank
so
you.
Glad a week after surgery, you're almost dancing the salsa down the hallway. So I'm pleased to see that you are doing well. Dr. Shakespeare, thank you for your ongoing research on that. Talk to your physicians about it. If you want more information, you can reach out to Intermountain Healthcare. There's a website, intermountainhealthcare.org. Dr. Shakespeare and Bill Evans, thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum.
Thank you.
Thank you.